home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Rated G Radio. We're in for a fantastic show tonight. We're going to be honored to have author Stephen Jackson, author of The Zeus Payload, joining us in just a few moments. He's our guest for the entire hour tonight. But before we bring Stephen on, I want to make sure that you know where we're going as a roadmap for the week, so you can always set your calendars accordingly. And if you are new to the show, click the follow button. You'll get a choice to either get a text or email, your choice. You tell the system every day that we're live. And most of the time, we are now live 6 days a week. So here's what's happening this week as the preview. Tomorrow, we have author Chris Gaida. He is the author of Arm Candy. He talks about his 15 years plus working as a Hollywood escort, not as prostitution, but as in like award shows. You know, when you see all those fantastic movie stars that are walking down the red carpet. He talks about all of his years of experience and working with a lot of the big names in Hollywood. He will come out and talk about his book, Arm Candy, and tell you all kinds of really cool stories. That's on tomorrow's show. Wednesday, we had Zoe Niklaus scheduled. However, she's teaching a class up in Alaska this week, and she was frantic about trying to come back and figure out how to get connected to a phone line to call in for the show on Wednesday. And I said, Zoe, take the night off. So we're actually going to be, we're not going to be doing a show on Wednesday. I may do a replay of one of her prior broadcasts just as something for you to listen to if you want to tune in. On Thursday, we have Rated LGBT Radio with my co-host Rob Watson. We're going to be welcoming actor and director Mike Drayden out of New York City. He's been on Child of the 70s, Last Call, the movie Open, which will be airing later this, I think probably in the fall. And a lot of other projects. Mike's going to talk to us on Friday. And then on the Friday night dance party, Xander Damas, he's a guitar rock and roller. He's going to be joining us live at 7 o'clock in hour number one. Hour number two, of course, are always your requests. So if you're thinking about something that you'd like to hear on the show or have heard recently from one of our prior guests, feel free to send me an email or go to the Rated G Radio Facebook page and send me a little note there. And I will play your request, give you a shout out, and give you mad props throughout the entire show for, you know, being part of the show. So thank you very much. Now, our guest today, I always like to do my 6 degrees of separation from Kevin Bacon before bringing the guest on. Stephen Jackson, somebody who I've known, I'm going to guess, for a little over about a year, year and a half at this point. And I met him through my good friends and neighbors, Jeff and Jill, who are both published writers themselves. And sometime back, they said, you know, Garrett, why don't you come to the OC screenwriters meeting? And so I went to that and it was great fun. And I met lots of really cool people. And then they said, we're going to go back to the SCWA, Southern California Writers Association. Why don't you come to this? And I'm like, didn't we just go to a meeting? And so the next thing I know, I'm at SCWA here in Fountain Valley. It's real close to Huntington Beach. So it's like a suburb of everything that's a suburb here. And got to meet all kinds of really cool authors who are passionate about what they do. And Stephen Jackson happens to be one of these people. He's going to be on in just a second talking about him and all of the cool things that he's working on. Because he's not just a one-trick pony. He's also a playwright. He does so much. But he's also part of Lit Up in Orange County, which is a monthly opportunity to hang out in Tustin. And so I've been to that event once. And again, a lot of the same cool people that you got to see at SCWA get together. And I think it's an awesome resource for people to come together as a network and of support for one another and to learn and grow and celebrate each other's success. So that's how I know Stephen, and we've been trying to get him on the show for some time, and I'm so grateful that he's taken an hour out of his evening tonight to spend it with us. And so without further ado, as we always like to say, Mr. Stephen Jackson, welcome to the show. How are you?
Well, thank you, Garrett. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm doing great. Thank you.
Well, and again, so a big shout out to Jeff and Jill. Thanks for, connecting the dots, as we always say. So, Stephen, for the first time, since this is, you know, we've chatted a little bit, but quite frankly, I don't think we've chatted tons and tons. And for the people who are listening tonight, I'd love for you to tell us just a little bit about yourself before we get into all of the stuff that makes you a great writer.
Okay. Well, first, I'd like to mention that I was so excited that you had me on the show. I was thinking about having T-shirts made. I went down and actually I tried to get a T-shirt printed that said, be seen with, or improve your image, be seen with Garrett, but they couldn't get it done in time. So, but I'm excited to be here.
Thank you.
And, you know, I'm a full-time writer. My first career I spent is an engineer. I was a computer scientist by trade and then ended up being a director of engineering and software technology in the defense business. And I spent 33 years doing that. And for the last 7 years, I've been a full-time writer. And so that's how I spend my days. And
so
that and walking the dog.
Well, okay. I love the idea of walking the dog too. So what kind of dog do you have, Stephen?
Well, I have a yellow lab. His name is Bear, and he's the star of every show.
Our lab's not like the best dog in the world. I wish I had space for him where I'm at. And I don't know if I've shared this with you. One time I had 7 labs at my house back in Arizona when I had the big yard. I was crazy then. But labs are the
best.
Wow.
Yeah, they are the best. It's wonderful.
So how do you go from being, you know, this technology guru in the defense business to becoming a published author?
Well, so back in the 70s, when I was working in engineering, I thought it would be good to try something different besides engineering. And so I decided to get a master's degree in professional writing from USC here in Los Angeles.
Wow.
And I really picked that because it was the hardest thing I could imagine to do. I was a pretty standard engineer. I wasn't good at English. I wasn't good at writing. I didn't have anything going for me. And honestly, I had to beg and plead to get into that program because I really wasn't qualified. And they repeatedly told me that over and over again. But I think, you know, when you show up in the dean's office 5 times with a check, eventually, you know, they just decide, okay, let's take his money
Fine.
And let him in. So they let me in, and the first day of class, they went around the room and asked about the novel you were currently working on. And I was the only one in the room that wasn't working on a novel. I was also the only one in the room that had a job. So
okay.
It was a very interesting paradigm shift for me. And so I went to school for at night for 3 years. I got the degree. Wrote a novel that was my master's thesis. You had to write a novel that they deemed of publishable quality to graduate. They had a panel of 3 professional writers that did all the reviewing, and only about a third of the people actually got through back then. So
really?
So it was tough stuff. But I was lucky enough to get through, and I was actually lucky enough to land an agent. Back then, who represented the book, and then we ran into the stark reality that getting published as an unpublished author is really hard, and so that book never got published. I wrote a second book. This was all back in the 80s. I wrote a second book that wasn't as good as the first book, and I learned a valuable lesson there, and that is that. It's a lot easier to write a book when you're in class and you have 20 students critiquing everything you write and telling you what's good and what's no good. And, and so I got to the point where I realized, well, I can't tell the difference. And so I have a lot of work to do. And so, and then I took a break. I raised kids and coached Little League and all that kind of stuff. And so I didn't write for 25, 30 years.
Wow.
Nothing serious anyway. I mean, I'd do some stuff, but nothing like a novel. And then in 2009, when I retired, I committed myself to writing thriller novels, with a few diversions, now and then, but mostly thriller novels. And so I wrote The Zeus Payload, and was incredibly fortunate to land find somebody who was interested in publishing it. Very lucky. And I have since written a book called The Lust Gambit, which I'm currently marketing right now. And then I'm about halfway through a third novel called Landia, which is actually a horror novel.
Oh my gosh.
So a little different.
So So we're gonna cover it all, folks, so fear not. And if you've got questions tonight, you'd like to ask Stephen a question, the phone lines are open at 323-657-1493. You're welcome to call in. We've got a bunch of people that have called, but unless you press 1 on your keypad, we just think you want to listen on your phone, which is totally cool. So just press 1 if you want to ask a question. Otherwise, just enjoy the show. So when you get ready to sit down and write the Zeus payload, and I've been reading that today, and I'm up to about chapter 15. I always try to read as much as I can of the author, you know, before you come onto the show. And I'm at the point now, Stephen, I was like, do I do the show or do I keep reading? Do I do the show or do I keep reading? I said, well, Stephen's going to be dialing in, so we better do the show, and then I'll read after the show. So I'm neck deep in the book, and now I don't want to put it down. How did you decide that this was going to be the topic for Zeus Payload when you sat down and says, you know what? Today's the day I'm going to start the novel.
Well, that's it. That's kind of an interesting story, because there were really several things going on that I noticed from my past and also in the news that got me thinking about how to converge these things into one thing. The first was when I was working back in the 70s. I was at Hughes Aircraft Company, and we were doing the radar for the B-2 bomber. Now, back then, you know, nobody knew that. It was a big secret, one of those highly classified deals. And
sure.
And so there was so much about that I found really interesting and entertaining. For example, I'm sure you and most of the audience is familiar with the television series Get Smart back in the 60s.
Sure.
Early 70s. Okay. So when we would go, when people at Hughes working on the radar would go to Northrop to work on the B-2 bomber, you know, you didn't just drive to a Northrop facility. You actually went to this building that was labeled as a medical facility. And, you know, and you'd walk in and there'd be a receptionist there with a badge, a nursing badge. And, you'd make the secret handshake and they'd let you into the back where there'd be this
really
huge building going on of top secret stuff. So very, very entertaining.
It really is,
I thought,
just like the movies.
That's exactly right. I mean, it just was just like it. Now, one of the stories that I found most compelling about the B-2 bomber was that the president of Northrop Grumman, it was his design originally to build the B-2 bomber. It was his design.
Okay.
But he became ill, and such that they didn't trust him to know that they were actually building the product that he had designed.
Oh, my gosh.
So they actually, you know, within Northrop, they had to compartmentalize everything so that, you know, they would build this thing and he wouldn't even know it was being built. And they told him basically on his deathbed, they told him that they had built the B-2 bomber on his deathbed, and he passed away when he heard that.
Oh, my word.
And so to me, that was this really compelling story. And I thought, well, gee, I should write something about that, because that's amazing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, flash forward to this century. And when we had all the terrorist activity with Osama bin Laden and all that, and I thought, well, gee whiz, what if I combine some of these things? And then there was the attack on Benghazi, and that's actually, as you know, that's where my book starts, which is live at the attack in Benghazi. And I tried to merge all these things together, and so the grandfather in the book, or the father, the head of the aerospace company, is really patterned after the president of Northrop, and the idea being that he had created something so advanced and so amazing, but they couldn't tell him that they were building it because of his health. And so I thought, well, I don't, you know, I can't do a bomber, but I know software and I know technology around computers, and so I thought, well, let's create a software worm. And also another piece of news at that time was the attack on the Iranian centrifuges by the joint CIA Israeli operation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, well, my character will be the guy who built that code, who built the worm that actually was used to attack the Iranian thing. But his father's idea was to actually make it so that that after it was installed in the network, you really couldn't detect that it was there ever, which is a really scary idea.
It's cool and scary and terrifying all at the same time.
All at the same time. And so that's how the Zeus payload came to be.
Right. Well, and we've got somebody calling in who wants to ask a question. So I'm going to take a wild stab that I might know who this is, but I'll just say welcome to the show. And you're live with Stephen Jackson, author of The Zeus Payload. Welcome, caller.
Is that me?
It is you. Is this Mr. Jeff Michaels?
It is. Hi, Steve. How are you?
Hi. Great, Jeff. How are you?
Good. I'm glad I got to make it to the show tonight. This is very nice. So, listen, one of the things that I always wonder about thriller writers, because you guys just seem to know so many technical things, is this all, I mean, does this come out of all your experience? And you're kind of answering the question as you're going along here, but is there other things that you have to research and how much do you make up?
Well, you end up researching a lot. When I write a thriller, I usually spend about 9 months doing research and planning and structuring before I write a word. Because with a thriller, I've always believed that with a thriller, structure is very important. You have to know how it starts and you have to know how it ends before you write anything. The middle can move around a whole bunch, but you really have to understand what it is you're trying to get done, especially if you're writing a thriller like I try to write, where there's a lot of complexity to it, because you have to make sure you're not contradicting yourself and, you know, you're consistent throughout the whole story and all that. And when you're dealing with technology, you have to make sure the technology is believable and real enough that a technologist will read it and go, oh yeah, I get that. That could happen. But at the same time, somebody with no technology background will read it and not be intimidated or put off by it. And so that was kind of the sweet spot I was trying to find with the Zeus payload.
Yeah. Do you have to, how much prognostication do you actually do? I mean, do you try to keep ahead of the curve, or do you write more of a period piece with some of this stuff? Technology changes so quickly is what I'm...
It does. It changes very quickly, and that's another reason not to put in too many specifics, because you don't want to date yourself.
Okay.
So you try to put in enough technology in general terms that it will last for, you know, a while after it's published and still feel current, which is definitely a challenge with technology.
Cool. Jeff, hey, I'm going to let you go, but I sure appreciate you calling in. Any last words?
No, no worries.
Cool. Okay.
Steve, I'm on Amazon right now. You're selling a book to me right now, man.
Awesome.
There we go. We're here to move the merch. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks a lot.
Appreciate you calling in.
Bye now.
And speaking of the merchandise, for everybody who's listening tonight, I want to make sure that you know that if you want to buy the Zeus payload by our guest tonight, Stephen Jackson, there is a link right on the show page. We make it so easy for you. It says, buy the Zeus payload on Amazon here. And you click the word here, and it takes you right to Stephen's author's page. And you just click the buy button, and you can get it on Kindle and, you know, all the cool stuff that Amazon has there for you. So go buy his book and support this independent author today. We appreciate the support very much. So Jeff had a really good point here, because with the technology question that he brought up, and I'm not going to mention the name of the author, because the author's now dearly departed. And in one of their last books, they wrote one of these technology thrillers, which I thought was interesting, because it really was not something that this author had done in the past. And it seemed like every reference would have been great if the book was written like 10 years before. And I'll tell you, reading the Zeus payload, how you detail and write about the technology, Stephen, I'll tell you, it seems far enough out that this is going to be something that somebody could read 5, 10, 15 years from now and still go, okay, yeah, this is still relevant. And I really thought that was smart of how you put that together.
Well, thank you. I tried to do that. I mean, one of the advantages I had is that the technology I'm describing, is a futuristic technology and something that people could envision, you know, out there for a long time, probably.
So, in knowing now that you have this great big background in defense and all of this, how much of your past were you able to really draw from outside of, you know, the B-2 bomber and, you know, the kind of like, how could I move the scenarios around? But from a storyline standpoint, you know, how much of this did you really draw from personal experience? Did you have a lot of crossover?
When you work for 33 years in an industry, you get all kinds of experiences and you meet all kinds of people. There's nobody in the book that's actually a real person from my life in the defense business or working with the intelligence agencies or anything like that. There's nobody that's actually real. Everything is made up. And the reason I do that is that I'm a big believer that the characters, you know, it's kind of like every story's been told, but you know, the characters are what make your story unique.
Sure.
And so I try to get the characters to map to these styles. I don't know if you're familiar with the anagram wheel with the 9 different styles. I actually spend a lot of time mapping my characters to those styles, and that supersedes any predisposition I might have about what I want the characters to be. And so I try to identify for a protagonist. I try to identify what their weak spots are and what their strengths are, and then for the antagonist, I try to figure out, well, what would be the perfect villain for this protagonist, and you know, what's going to make the best sidekick, what's going to make the best love interest, and work on that. And that's, like I said, I spend 9 months figuring these things out before I do any writing, and that's one of the reasons I do that.
So can I ask a silly question here? When in reading the book, you've got two, you know, you've got the good guy and the bad guy. You've got, you know, King, who's the good guy, he's going to go out and save the world, but then you've also got the bad guy, and do I pronounce his name Soleil?
That's how I pronounce it.
Okay, well, then it's Soleil, and he's the bad guy that wants to take over Al-Qaeda. But, you know, I couldn't help but feel that, you know, if understanding where Soleil was coming from and what his background was, that I was like, well, you know, if I were sitting in a different country, would I be thinking of Soleil as the hero in this book and then King as the bad guy? Or, you know, just because I'm sitting here in Orange County, is Soleil the bad guy because that's what we've been taught to think? Because, you know, you kind of have a compelling argument for what, you know, he's going through, and you, you know, point some of his rationale on why he's doing the things that he's doing. Now, it might not make sense to everybody, but as soon as I saw what happened to him and then kind of understood what happened to King, I was like, well, I could see why both of them are doing what they're doing. Was that intentional, or am I reading too much into this?
No, you just made my day. You know, when you build an antagonist, you want them to be the hero of their own story. You want them to have a belief system that you as a reader can relate to, even if you wouldn't do it what they're doing and you don't agree with what they're doing. At least you can understand why they're doing it. And every villain, you know, in a great thriller, I think every villain really believes they're the good guy.
Right.
And
he clearly does.
That's right. And so that was definitely something I was going for. And I'm so glad that you picked up on that.
Well, and it's funny because, you know, every time, and he's not, you know, he's in the book a little bit more in the beginning, in the middle, you know, it's more about King and what's going on in his situation. And I don't want to give away too much of the plot here. So every time I have Sully come back into the equation, I'm like, oh, okay, I wonder what he's up to now. And, you know, it's, you do make him very human, and there are some very likable things about him, which I was, you know, not expecting, because usually, you know, oh, we're burning the children with acid and let's do terrible things. And, you know, he's got some redeeming qualities about him. His worldviews might not necessarily be what ours are, but boy, I was shocked that that was, you have a very human approach that you've given him.
Good. Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
So one other thing that I thought was interesting in your book here. Well, there's lots of interesting things, but the notes that I made here is that you have a common theme that kind of runs throughout the course of your book about King wanting to make sure that he does the right thing, and but the right thing by a lot of people, not just him, but society, his Catholic upbringing, his papa, you know. So the key words I wrote down are justice, morality, religion, choice, and duty. How important was that for you to integrate into the storyline for this character of King?
Well, it was, to me, it was critical that King be a really well fleshed out person, and that he has internal conflicts as he goes along toward trying to reach his goal. Even though his parents were killed by this terrorist, he feels a responsibility to the law and to justice, and you know, how much revenge is okay and not okay, and all that. And so,
and he has to make a lot of these choices very quickly too. It's not like, you know, well, I'm going to sit here for 6 months and dwell on it. You know, this is in a matter of minutes and, you know, maybe hours if he's lucky. He has to make some really tough choices that, you know, a day or two before just simply weren't, you know, part of his routine. And I think that for me, that was, I think, a struggle. You know, if I were trying to, you know, put myself in King's position to go, you know, what's happening here and, you know, what's going on in his life. And I think that he's, I think, you know, the battle that he goes through and trying to make those decisions is really interesting.
Well, I'm glad you felt that way. And you know, his journey begins as a child when he's present at the Beirut right. bombing embassy, right? And his parents are killed there by Saleh. So I've tried to exaggerate his dilemma by making it such that he's been chasing this guy for 30 years and, you know, with no reason to believe still alive other than his own faith that he's going to find him and he's going to exact some sort of revenge for the death of his parents.
Oh, I'll tell everybody, we're joined tonight by author Stephen Jackson. He's the author of The Zeus Payload. It's available on Amazon. I've got a link for you to go and click on that. We're going to take a short commercial break. Thank our folks at It Matters Radio for their sponsorship along with Rainbow Brew. We'll be back in 2 minutes and 30 seconds. If you need to get up and get a refresher on your tea or coffee or adult beverage, go do that. But turn the volume up so you can hear the commercial as we go. And we'll be back in just a couple of moments. Stay tight.
Welcome to our discussion of It Matters Radio. Our guest today is Angus McWilliams.
Hey, laddie, let's get on with this thing. I'm on my way to a birthday party for Nessie.
You're throwing a birthday party for the Loch Ness Monster?
Well, first of all, it's not a monster. And second of all, I'm talking about niece Nessie. She's a wee bit of a lovely lass.
I see. Well, okay. Angus, can you give us your thoughts on It Matters Radio?
Aye, wonderful people. They had me on a while back to talk about my book.
Your what?
My book. I wrote a book about the adventures in Scotland.
Oh, I see. A book.
That's what I just said. What are you, a deaf man?
It Matters Radio focuses on discovering new talent and bringing important indie artists on the air. Monica, Kenneth, and Carrie offer up meaningful conversation on new music, books, and fun topics. It's unlike any other radio program known to man and woman alike.
You can say that again.
Known to man and woman alike.
Just because I said you can say it again doesn't mean you have to say it again.
I'm just doing my best to show everyone that It Matters Radio basically brings variety, fun, and entertainment with a sincere desire to discover new topics and talent.
Why didn't you just say that?
I just did.
Hey, Letty, remind me when I can listen.
It Matters Radio is on every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific.
You Americans with your different time zones. We only have one time zone in Scotland.
And that would be...
That would be the time to down a pint or two of ale.
It Matters Radio, for the best in conversation, music, books, and entertainment. Join us Thursday evenings at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific. Discover the depth, diversity, meaningfulness, caring, guest-focused, friendly, enjoyable atmosphere of It Matters Radio with Ken, Monica, and Carrie.
That's a mouthful if I have a hard one.
Yes, and I'm going to go brush my teeth now. It Matters Radio.
When it comes to coffee, freshness is queen. That's why Rainbow Brew believes you should have the freshest coffee, roasted to order in small batches and delivered to your door within a couple days. Whether you're purchasing for a coffee shop, restaurant, or home, Rainbow Brew is your one-stop shop for fair trade and organic coffee. Offering many unique blends, including AM950's own Blue State blend. That's Rainbow Brew, the Queen Bean, a proud sponsor of the Morning Grind. Online at rainbowbrew.com. Brew something good today.
Thank you, It Matters Radio and Rainbow Brew. By the way, if you do go to Rainbow Brew and buy some of their coffee, they're based in Minneapolis, St. Paul. They will actually do a happy dance if you fill out their form and say, how do you hear about us? And you say, Rated G Radio. They will do a happy dance before grinding your beans and putting them in the mail and sending you. We are joined tonight by Stephen Jackson. He's the author of The Zeus Payload. It's available on Amazon. I will tell all of you, you need 10 copies, one to keep for yourself and then 9 to give away as gifts. You know people, they need a good gift this year, and that's a great one to give if they like murder, mystery, intrigue, spying, and all kinds of exciting things like that. So we spent the first part of the show talking to Stephen about the book and how that comes about, but now I would love to turn the topic to how you go about writing these great books here, Stephen. I know you took the class at USC. You got your degree in the writing. You wrote your first book, and then you set it aside for a period of time. When you retired and got ready to start writing again, how did you develop some type of a work schedule as a writer to say, okay, this is how I'm going to do it? What was your process?
Well, I don't have a specific time every day that I write. I get up in the morning and take the dog for a long walk in the park and, you know, have breakfast, and then I come back to my computer and I spend most of the day at the computer, and oftentimes I'm writing, oftentimes I'm just thinking about storylines or doing planning and all that. So, but I actually probably am most productive between like 2 and 5 o'clock in the afternoon, which I think is counterintuitive to a lot of people. A lot of people try to get up early and write a bunch of stuff. But I probably do most of my actual, typing between 2 and 5 in the afternoon.
So does that correlate to how your work schedule would be before you retired? Did you have different parts of the day? You say, in the morning I'm going to tackle this, in the afternoon I'm going to tackle that. Does that follow like a similar thought process for you, or is this just what works for you now as a writer?
It really is just what works now. My previous career in engineering really didn't have any kind of a pattern to my day. When you're in a business like that, there are a lot of meetings and a lot of emergencies and catastrophes and things like
sure,
that.
Sure.
So you're always firefighting and things like that. Here, the nice thing about this is my day is pretty much my own. I mean, my wonderful wife goes off to her work, and I'm here with the dog, and he and I hang out and work until she comes home in the evening, and then we all get back together as a family and have a nice evening together. It's a wonderful way to spend the day. It takes about 2 years for me to write a novel, doing it this way. I'm sure I could do it faster if I forced myself to type more and not think so much, but I'm comfortable doing it the way I do it. And I think
you've got your system.
I think I'm better at it this way. I think I end up with a better product if I spend that time thinking and planning and all that. And of course there's, all writers, it's all about rewriting, right? I'll spend 9 months writing and then another 9 months, tearing it all apart. For the Zeus payload, I actually, for every word that's in there, there are 3 words that I threw away.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So, It's a, you know, a lot of writing and a lot of rewriting going on in a book. I told you I was working on a book now called Lamia, which is a horror novel, and it's, you know, I wrote the first draft and I read it from cover to cover and I said, well, this isn't very good. And I threw 90% of it away and, you know, started improving it. So,
you know, going back to your first book that you wrote when you were in school, when you finished that book, you know, because you said a lot of the, you know, classmates didn't get past that, or they didn't, you know, pass on the first try, and you did. Did, when you got finished with that book compared to where you're at now, do you think that your style has changed, or how have you morphed over the course of the years to become a, is using the term, a better writer? That's probably not fair, but how has your writing changed over the years to where you're at now?
Well, with it, you know, with experience, you get much better. Sometimes I'm just astounded that first book got the attention that it did. When I go back and look at it, but I can tell you that the books that I'm writing now are much better written than the Zeus Payload. I'm getting better every day, and I can see it. I don't know if. So I think that's just part of the maturity of the writing for me. And of course now I'm doing it full time. Back then it was a night and weekend kind of thing. I had a very busy job and was doing a lot of traveling and things like that. So
how do you find inspiration for your stories today? Because, you know, as somebody who, you know, I write songs and I'll do this, you know, I've got my album out, and I will tell you when I'm done with that, I go like, you know, if we were having a conversation, I'd say, Steve, I can't ever write another song again. I am completely done. I have no more creativity left in me. How do you go from writing the Zeus Payload to, you know, you've got a stage play, Fade to Crazy. We're going to talk about another Asylum for Rejected Characters that you've written here in just a second. Where do you find these great ideas to, you know, sit down and do a new project?
You know, I'm really lucky in that I have no shortage of ideas. What I have is a shortage of time. So I have 11 other novels that I have, that I've outlined.
Wow.
So I have no shortage of ideas. I just, you know, I just have to pick and choose what I'm going to work on.
When you pick those 11 projects, are you developing the characters first or the plot?
I always think about the plot first.
Okay.
And I do a lot of that thinking when I'm out in the park with the dog, or, you know, walking along the beach or whatever, where I'm able to just sort of do free flow thought and without throwing any ideas away. And then I come back and I write a few down, and I don't watch the news very much, but, you know, I can't avoid the big stories, I guess. And
sure.
So when I hear those big stories, sometimes I think, well, gee, what if that was in this situation, or what if this was going on? And having the background that I have is got some advantages for me, in that I can apply some of my background or experience in ways that maybe other people can't. You know, they talk about having if you're going to be a successful nonfiction writer, you have to have this big platform, right? Otherwise nobody will pay any attention to you. Well, I think it really helps for fiction writers too, to have a platform. I mean, I have no doubt that the publisher that ended up wanting to publish my book was influenced in part by the fact that I was a legitimate person that understood the technology and that I would bring some kind of a platform, you know, even to a fiction audience.
So because it's all about the marketing of the book, and I was going to actually ask you about that later, but now, since we're kind of diving off into that realm, when you get the book done, you know, because you have this writer, you know, you've got the writer mentality, you've spent the last 2 years writing this book, The Zeus Payload, and, you know, the publisher says this is great, you get it published. Are you the person that comes up with your marketing plan to get that out to the world? Do you have help with that? How did you decide what was going to happen after the book hit you and that, and you know, arrived in your house and you're holding it in your hands and then you go, now what? How did you come up with what you were going to do next?
Well, I think in today's writing world, most writers are responsible for their own marketing. There are very few writers that have a big engine of marketing that's sponsored by the publisher. It used to be more that way, but it's gotten less and less all the time. The publishing business has changed quite a bit, and they're all struggling to survive and all that.
Right.
So I've always felt that I was entirely responsible for all the marketing of the book. The publisher did send out press releases at certain times, you know, when they signed me, when the book came out in ebook, when the book came out in paperback and all that. And I've been very fortunate. I've had three book clubs pick it up and I've gone to those book clubs to speak to them when they were talking about the book and answer questions. Of course there's this wonderful opportunity here. And I had a talk at the San Marino Library last month and other cool things. So I've had many nice opportunities to promote the book. I call it the Zeus Payload World Tour. It's going to make an appearance in later this year, and but I don't spend a great deal of time on marketing because I really want to finish this third book. And so I don't spend a lot of time on marketing. I don't hire a PR firm. I don't, or anything like that. I have a website that was professionally done by a very good, very good, website builder. I have a fan page on Facebook and a LinkedIn page, and all that kind of stuff. But,
sure. From a selling standpoint, what has worked best for you in getting the word out?
Well, I think most books I think sell based on word of mouth.
Okay.
The book clubs, a book club's a wonderful opportunity to sell books because you've got 20 or 25 people that are going to buy the book at one shot, right?
So, sure, yeah.
So that's a great thing when you get a book club that wants to get the book. Now the other stuff is kind of word of mouth, and every writer I think will tell you that the thing they love more than anything else is a review. Somewhere where people can read it, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Goodreads, whatever. And so I've been fortunate to have very positive reviews. I think there are 18 reviews on there, and I think, like 14 of them were 5-star, and
nice.
all but one of the others was 4-stars. And so, and none of them are related to me,
you didn't even have to pay for it.
Right. I didn't have
Those
to pay for it.
So, as a writer here, Stephen, what's your favorite and least favorite aspect of doing what you do now?
Well, the favorite part of it is, this is going to sound kind of funny, but the favorite part of it is actually getting a chance to share the experience with people like on this show. I really enjoy this. And I'm kind of an introvert, so it doesn't come naturally for me to get in front of people and talk or give talks or things like that.
And you're such a great storyteller, so I find that shocking to me.
So many people have come up to me and said, you have inspired me to write more, to do this, to do that. And so that's very gratifying that I can have any influence on other people in a positive way. I mean, that's what life's all about. And so I feel really good about that. And I really enjoy thinking of complexity. I enjoy planning for really complex stories not so complex that the reader will get lost, but complex enough that they're, you know, you've got the opportunity for twists and turns and the unexpected, and so I really enjoy that. You know, probably what I enjoy least is sending out query letters and, you know, to agents and publishers and trying to sell the book to them. That's a tricky.
Well, it's not the fun part.
Thing. Yeah, it's not the fun part. And of course, you get a lot of rejections when you're doing this business, right? You get tons and tons of rejections if you're lucky enough to hear from them at all. So you know, because they're very busy and the agents' lives have gotten really crazy and with the published changes and so they're very careful about the books they're going to take on and things like that. So, you know, the publishing business is a tough business. I always tell people it's not for wimps. You have to have a hard skin. You have to work really hard and there's no guarantee that you'll have any success. And of course, success is always defined differently by every writer. I've had the success that I've wanted. I feel like I've already won. Having a legitimate publisher say that this book is worthy of being published and we think we can make money on it, to me that was always the ultimate goal, and I feel very fortunate to have had that happen.
So for now that you're published and you know you've got all these other works that are out there, what are your thoughts on working with the publishing company, whether it's small or large, or doing the self-published route? What do you have a preference or thoughts on either?
When I wrote the first book, The Zeus Payload, I was determined to find a publisher and not publish it myself, because there's a lot of, I mean, anybody can publish a book today. It's not hard. And there's a lot of stuff that gets published that's really not very good. There's a lot of stuff that gets self-published that's very, very good, but, I wanted professionals, whether it be agents, literary agents, or publishers, or you know, editors, people like that. I wanted people who are paid to know what good writing is and what should sell. I wanted those people to be able to say, hey, you know what, this is worthy of being out in the marketplace. That was my goal. If it never sold, I would just say, well, I wasn't good enough, and I have to keep trying to get better. And so I had the patience and, you know, the 33 year engineering career behind me so that I could kind of do it on my own terms. And so I was very fortunate to have that experience. Today, I'm still trying to sell the second book to, the traditional publishers or literary agents. And I'm still intending to do that with the third one. But now that I've gotten over that hurdle of feeling like I belong, then I'd be more open to doing the self-publishing route if it turns out that that's the only way to get it in print next time.
Very good. Well, I think, you know, whatever path people take is the right one. So whether you're doing self-published or you work with a publisher, whatever you choose to do, I think is right for your particular situation, because I don't think there's a wrong answer. It just has to work for you.
Hey, right.
Stephen, we're gonna talk about your new play, or I don't know. It's written in the last year, The Asylum for Rejected Characters. But I also want to talk a little bit about SCWA and Lit Up, because I know that you're involved in both of those. Can you talk about the organizations and why you're connected to these groups a little bit, and then we'll get to your play?
Sure. SCWA is the Southern California Writers Association. It's a spectacular organization that cares passionately about writers. There are over 100 members, and we have monthly meetings in Fountain Valley in Northern Orange County in California, and we have fantastic speakers come and talk about the craft and the business of writing. And you mentioned earlier when I got back into writing, did I do anything to kind of remember what I was supposed to do and all that. And this organization's been critical in helping me with all the great speakers and all the networking that goes on and the advice I get from published authors in there. Very, very important stuff. It's a great organization. It costs almost nothing to join, and it's really the best value for writers, I think, in Southern California. The Lit Up is something that is sponsored by Pure Fiction League, and I don't have anything. I'm a member of Pure Fiction League, but I don't actually have anything to do with putting on Lit Up. That's done
that's
by Maddie Margarita, who's a genius at doing that, and has made a huge, you know, just a phenomenal impact in Southern California in the writing business, where writers get to come and actually read their work and then have a discussion with everybody about it. So it's a fabulous thing. That also meets monthly in Tustin, if you go back a few years when that didn't exist and you compare it to today, there's so much more opportunity for writers in this area. It's a wonderful thing.
Cool. Well, so everybody needs to go check out FCWA on Facebook. There's a great group. You can join that. And if you can't figure it out, send me a note and I will get you connected up. And it really is filled with just tremendous people, quality writers, fantastic friends, and exceptional networking. You get monthly. And then if you get stuck during the course of the month, you've already made friends, so you need to go hang out. So the next thing I want to talk about, we got a few minutes left, is The Asylum for Rejected Characters. This is a one-act stage play that you wrote this last year. And I love this. And I will tell you, the Zeus payload is great, but that's a different kind of great. This was fun, quick, easy, and the humor that you have infused in this here, Stephen, is just it's dry and hysterical at the same time. How did this come about for you?
Well, every year I enter a playwriting festival, an international playwriting festival, as a sort of a break from the novel writing. And you mentioned it, you know, you mentioned that's a story with dry humor in it. And so it's an opportunity for me to kind of test my writing chops in comedy, which is really hard to write, I think, really hard to get right anyway. And so I enter this international playwriting festival every year. It's run out of the Playhouse in San Juan Capistrano, the Camino Real Theater or Playhouse. And this play you just mentioned, I've been lucky to have four plays produced there in the last 5 years. They're all one act, 10-minute plays, so they're short. And so I can actually write one of those in like a weekend, you know.
And that must be kind of fun for you. It's a nice little diversion, and
it's a nice diversion, and I get to try to be funny. It's a contest, and so they get about 250 entries a year. They pick seven of those to perform on stage.
Wow.
And then of those seven, they have the over seven, they perform all seven over seven nights, and the audience votes for their favorites. And then they collect all the votes at the end of the time and pronounce a winner. So I was very fortunate. The Asylum for Rejected Characters was one of the seven that was put on this year in 2016, and it came in fourth in the overall voting. So that was very, I thought that was very cool. And I all you know I get I have the I get to meet the director. I get to meet the author or the actors. Like, you know, and so as a playwright, because it's local, it's a 10-minute drive from my house to the playhouse.
Sure.
So I get to go meet everybody and talk to them. And then they have another event there every year that I have been part of the last 2 years. And I suspect might be part of, I think they'll ask me back and I'd love to do it, is they have something called 24-Hour Creative, where they bring in seven playwrights on Friday night and seven directors, and they give the writers a theme, and the writers go home and write all night. and come back in the morning with a completed stage play.
Oh my gosh.
And then that night they put it on. They have the director has actors and they take the scripts and they rehearse all day. And then that night it's actually performed live. So in 24 hours, you go from nothing to a completed stage play. And so I've done that the last couple of years. Fade to Crazy was one of those. Which was very fun to write.
What is that like? I mean, how does that feel at that end of that 24-hour period? You know, you went from nothing and now it's done.
Yeah, it's a great feeling. It's a lot of fun for me. I get a great deal of satisfaction, and the people who put it on, the people at the Playhouse, and the people who run it, and the directors, the other writers, everybody is so fantastic to be around and work with. And so it's a wonderful feeling. And, you know, the first time I did it, I really I didn't know what to expect. So I drank I don't drink coffee. So I drank 7 Mountain Dews to stay awake while I was working all night. And then the side effect of that was I couldn't sleep during the day, you know, so I was up for like 36 hours. And then my wife and I play competitive, bridge. And so the next day we were actually out in Riverside competing in a bridge tournament, which we won. So, you know, I guess sleep is overrated.
Yeah, you sleep when you're dead. Somebody told me that once, and I said, well, I might need a few 8-hour naps during the course of the week. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
So, Stephen, we got a couple of minutes left before we let you go. Number one, it's been just a real pleasure having you here. I'm so grateful for your time. Your book, The Zeus Payload, is available on Amazon. I have a link for all the listeners, if you were listening to the show tonight, to click that, go buy it, buy the 10 copies, 1 for you, 9 for gifts throughout the course of the year. Stephen, before we go, first question, how do you want people to stay in contact with you and connect?
Well, I'm on Facebook. I have a fan page. I have a friend page. I have a LinkedIn account. And then on my website, you can sign up to get my blog if you're interested, StephenGJackson.com. And I also should mention that there are fantastic recipes and restaurant recommendations on my website, because my wife and I travel around and get great recipes and restaurant ideas from the top restaurants in the world. So more than just writing on there.
Do you have a favorite cuisine that you and your wife like to partake in?
Well, we're big fans of French, classic French food, but we like everything. We like everything.
Right on.
So.
And then last question of the night, and then I'm going to let you go here. What advice do you have for other writers that might either be the beginning, middle, or end of their writing project that they're currently working on?
Well, I'll tell you, writing's a tough business, and you just have to persevere and never let anything bother you or get in the way or slow you down. Don't let other people tell you you can't do it. Don't let, don't be discouraged when you get rejected. Try to get better every day as a writer. And if you get better every day as a writer, then eventually, you should be able to meet whatever goals you've set for yourself.
There we go. Everybody, it's been Mr. Stephen Jackson. His book, The Zeus Payload, again, is out on Amazon. Go buy the book tonight. Stephen, you got an open door here anytime you want to come back. I'd love to have you here when your next book is picked up for that big 7-figure contract. Come and hang out with me for another hour, and we'll talk more about your writing.
Thanks, Garrett. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Have a great night, and I'll see you at SCWA. By the way, do you know when that next SCWA meeting is?
21st.
Okay, so it's coming up in 2 weeks. If you need information on that, get a hold of me, everybody, and I will make sure that you have the information to go and attend. I go every chance I get. It is so super fun. You get a great lunch, brunch, whatever you want to call it. The networking is fantastic. You should definitely take advantage of that. Stephen, we'll chat soon. I'll hopefully see you at SCWA. You have a great night. For everybody else who is listening to the show tonight, remember Tuesday, tomorrow, we have the interview with Chris Gaida. He's the author of Arm Candy. We actually recorded this on Mother's Day, and I tell you that because I'm out in the desert tomorrow filming a new music video, so you can actually listen to our interview starting at 4 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and again, of course, on demand anytime that you want, and that's with Chris Gaida for Arm Candy. On Thursday, again, Rated LGBT Radio, our guest is Mike Drayden. His new web series is called Last Call. He's been on Child of the 70s, the new movie Open. And on Friday's Friday Night Dance Party, Xander Demas, and he's going to be playing guitar and hard rock music. It will be exciting for hour number one. Hour number two, of course, is your request. So get them in now, get them in early, and get them in often. And you've been listening to the show. Don't drive distracted, and we will see you live. But we'll see you live tomorrow. Have a great night, everybody.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.